listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 51, joined as always by my co-host and Adam and OJ. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great. Glad to be back. How's it going for you, OJ?
I'm also doing great. Looking forward to the weekend.
That's me too. Looking forward to that. We've had some crazy weather, so I'm looking forward to some nice weather and hopefully more and more rain, and looking forward to the freaking weekend.
I'm telling you, sure. So Adam, as we talked yesterday a few times about my softball being on Wednesdays, like one of my softball nights on Wednesday nights, and it just seems to rain everywhere. Why can't we be on Thursday? Today was a beautiful day. I mean, the field would have been wet, but it was a beautiful day. Like,
beautiful day.
Crazy. Yeah. But, you know. Yeah.
And unfortunately, looking forward to next week, it looks like more rain Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday as well. So, yet another rain out.
Our team group chat is already like, all right, cool. We'll see you guys in like 2 weeks. At this point, like, we might as well just cancel the freaking session. I mean, legitimately, we played 3 doubleheaders because it's a doubleheader league. So we played 6 games. So, but there's other teams that have only played 2 because we played the early games and then it happened to rain on one of those weeks. So, but we've also had, I think now 4 rainouts, which is
Speaking of rainouts, Cardinals were also rained out yesterday as well.
It's funny too because Adam, to your point, they got the Cardinals got canceled before our softball did, and I'm like,
right.
I mean, I get it. Downtown St. Louis and St. Peter's, they're completely different, but not really. Anyways.
But it is canceled until August. So hopefully by August, we're doing a little bit better. Let's hope.
Yeah.
Because things are not looking too good for us right now.
No. Speaking of the Cardinals, we'll go ahead and jump into that here. So, quick update. They are now 15-21. So, since the last session, they are 1-4. They have dropped to last in the Central. They're in fifth, which is one position worse than last week. Excuse me. They're now 6 games behind Milwaukee, which is a half game more than last week. They're 13th in the NL, which is 2 positions worse than last week. We are now 10 games behind Philly, who's just been on a freaking heater. That's 3 games more than last week when we were 7 games behind for control of the NL. We are now 25th in MLB, gents. So,
awesome. Just
3 positions worse than last session. And again, 10 games behind Philly for the league in the MLB. I mean, it's not looking good. It looks very similar at this point to last year. You know, Adam, I'm going to start with you here. I mean, do you believe that this is kind of the path, or not the path, but do you believe this is going to be kind of the
of our year?
Yeah, exactly. Do you feel this is where the team's heading? Yeah.
It doesn't seem like we're making any ground anytime soon, and it just seems like bad news piling on top of bad news. I'm hopeful that things improve. I know that baseball, there's a lot of things that can change through the year. I know it's still early in the season, but it's unfortunately the same start that I was sadly expecting coming into this year, that we were going to be near the, the last in the pack, so to speak. So I was hoping we would be a little bit better, maybe mid, but it's not looking too good at all. And I'm not all that hopeful. Maybe OJ is. He's more of the optimist in the crowd. So
OJ, what's your take so far? Do you feel that they obviously, I mean, we know it's still early, right? But this is the direction of the team and it's just progressively getting worse. Obviously hopefully they'll be better than 1-4 every week. But OJ, what's your thought process here going forward?
Well, I mean, it's pretty tough to think that anything's good going to happen at all at this point. Because, I mean, it depends if you want to look at this as a continuation of 2023 or not, which you kind of can, even though they're losing for different reasons. The thing that everyone thought would suck has generally been actually pretty good this year. And the thing everyone thought would be good has just been unconscionably bad. but you know, depending on how you want to look at it, you still could argue that maybe the overall attitude of the team is a carryover from 2023. The field kind of is the same. Like, anything yeah, down by like 3 runs, it's like they look like they think the game's over. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm. All of a sudden, just they're giving up.
Inning of just out, like 8-pitch innings with just 3 ground out. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, yeah. Oh, turning my brain off and just phoning it in till
I'm already on the golf course, right?
Yeah, they're going through the motions.
It's really what it looks like to me when I see the way their body language after they get down. It's like they just give up. Like, this is one of the teams that does the worst at coming back that I've seen in a long time. This iteration of the Cardinals.
No fight. Yeah, exactly. There's no fight in this team. And we've seen this 2006, 2011, 2013, where the teams might not necessarily been like they had their stretches of real bad baseball. But they always kept a consistent fight every single pitch, every single inning. I mean, how easy would it have been for David Freese, you know, going up in the, you know, 2011 to just take a strike out there and just be like, well, you know, we're already getting down. It's game 6. You know what I mean? Like, the chances of us doing anything, because we're down by 2 runs at this point in time. I mean, it's easy to phone in, but the Cardinal way has always been to every single pitch, you know, try to fight. And I'm just not seeing it from this team. To your point, OJ, it's been lackluster. I mean, it feels like when I was with my old softball team. Sorry, guys, if you are listening, if anybody's listening from that. But we would get boat race, you know, but you're going into the bottom of the first inning and we're down like 20-something runs. It's like, okay, yeah. Cool, dude. So this is already lost. Why am I even here? Yeah, like. Yeah,
you're just going through the
most. Yeah. Exactly. Adam, as I talked to you, there's one time we were down 43-0 going to the bottom of the first. And I'm like, can we just call this? Like,
that's please. Like, okay, like, this game is over.
Yeah. I'm just like, this is ridiculous because here. I'm like, I don't even want to see the second inning. I'm like, I just want to walk out. Like, these guys got their batting practice. Okay, great. Give us all of our outs in the first inning and we'll see if we can even get to 43 runs because I know we can't. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And things are piling on. Obviously, injuries have been a bigger concern. That's actually part of the next thing that I definitely want to bring up is the Contreras injury. First and foremost, OJ, I'm going to start with you. Did you see the injury?
No, unfortunately, because I was busy. So I heard it on the radio. Yeah. I was driving.
Okay, I got you.
Announcers did a good job of painting. They made it sound pretty bad. I actually was like, oh, great, he fractured his fucking forearm or something, you know, and that's what it was.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, he's out 6 to 8 weeks. Like, ugh. But at least it is, on one hand, it, you know, once it's healed, it'll be like good to go. It's not like a soft tissue thing that just lingers forever, you know? So I guess that's a bright
side. Yeah. And they did say it was a relatively clean break. So they, again, all they have to do is set it back in. The biggest thing about that, I think, is not even the physical aspect of this, of healing that forearm, but the mental stuff. I mean, you still got to be doing the exact same thing, you know, you've been doing, and you might be a little bit more gun shy with that. And everyone kept saying too that it was on the backswing. It definitely was not on the backswing.
No, if you not that I've seen anyway, because it was not.
Seen it, and it was not. I actually
yeah.
Seen
so
it. And I actually saw an in-depth analysis of it as well, yeah. And you can see it very well.
But, yeah, so during the broadcast of the game, they said on the backswing, he got hit by the backswing. That's what ESPN was reporting and all that stuff as well. And I was like, really? I'm like, how did he break his forearm on the backswing? I mean, like, don't get me wrong. These guys are powerful as shit. But also to get to his forearm on the backswing, did he, like, sit there, like, do a full, like, disco? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand that. Is he swinging a golf club?
And he's already been hit by a backswing this year. Maybe that's
twice.
I don't know. Yeah, like twice. So maybe that's why you're seeing stuff about it. I don't know.
And it happens so quick too that, you know, again, like the broadcasters are going to be there. You know, they can watch it in slow mo and then be able to tell. But their first initial reaction is, oh, he got hit. It has to be on the backswing because there's no, you just don't see it where a catcher gets hit by a batter. And I love it how too, by the way, so after the dude, you know, gets, so Martinez breaks of Contreras's forearm and it's catcher interference, so he gets to go to first. And I'm sitting there going, he swung so goddamn late that like he had to catch the ball. I don't understand. Whatever. Yeah, that's just
Well, if the ball was in his glove and then the guy swings, yeah, you kind of gotta figure that is on the batter. But I don't think it was quite bad, huh?
No, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't like a Bugs Bunny thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was still pretty
interference on a backswing. That's literally not the rules. So that's how you know it wasn't on the backswing. But
Yeah,
that's a big blow because they can't score runs, and he was one of their most prolific threats, or the most prolific, the only real threat they had.
Yeah,
he was the only.
It's just like
OPS over 800 on the team.
Well, it just seemed like Contreras was hitting home runs, and you're like, oh, cool. So Contreras here, he comes, and all of a sudden, oh, now he's gone. Great.
Yeah, yeah.
What do we do now?
Sonny Gray got lit up tonight, but I think that Milwaukee maybe knew something on him because Reese Hoskins swung with authority. Like in the fifth inning, Gray gives up the sixth run. He talks, then him and Paez talk. Paez is catching tonight. And then all of a sudden he comes back out and gets the first guy out. Then Reese Hoskins comes up and he swings like with authority at a pitch that almost hits him in the head. So like he thought he knew what pitch was coming. So they had something on him somehow, one way or another. Either they were somehow got signs or they had a tip on him, something like that. And he just got now they lose. Because that's what it looks like. It looked like Reese Hoskins was 100% certain a slider was coming and it was actually a fastball near his head. So yeah, he had a scary moment there, but he fell down afterwards and then Gray got him with the high heater this time in the zone for strike three. But yeah, that kind of sucks because you kind of needed to win this game, but it's six, so probably not going to happen.
And it was pretty funny too coming into this game because now if people use the ESPN app, you can now they have ESPN bets all over their thing. So like you can see this you know the lines for the betting and stuff like that, which is really annoying because you can't just see like all the games like, you know, real quick and like quick glance. Now you're having to like scroll down like a bunch because you have to get through all this stuff. But for the Cardinals, the under over for us and run scored tonight was 2. And the under was highly voted. I'm just like, or like highly bet on. It's just, it's crazy. But
yeah, yeah. It's pretty trash. So. I mean, they're playing Paez, who was in Double-A last year. They are starting him at catcher tonight for some reason. I don't know why he couldn't start Herrera. We're starting Paez. Paez is much better at the plate. Like you can almost think of him as like, you know, he's pretty much a finished product behind the plate. He's a great catcher defensively. I don't know that he's ready to hit yet, but that's what they kind of ran out with a weak lineup tonight, almost like they were saying, like, well, we got Sonny Gray going, so we'll try and
get
our guys now and win it anyway, and then we can play our best players the last two games. But you know, maybe that was the best thing to do anyway, because he still gave up 6 runs. So even with your best guys out there, I mean, they still probably wouldn't have put up even 6. So, but
yeah. I mean,
starting to get
is what it is.
I'm starting to like climb more aboard the get rid of Marmol bandwagon, because I really do think him and his staff are suppressing the talents of the players. Like,
yeah,
if you look at like Fangraphs last year and this year projected them much better than our entire team. So when your entire team is underperforming, it has to be coaching, right? Like there's something wrong. Like, so,
and it's been consistent too. So it's 2 consecutive years, and you know that our it's not that far removed.
That's the difference for me, is it's gone on long enough and it's carried over into the new season. And now I'm starting to think that to me, it does a better job to like confirm that maybe the coaching staff is the problem. So like, I'm definitely getting to where I want to see a coaching change, because something's got to change, because not all these players are this fucking bad. The Cardinals didn't turn into the Oakland A's overnight. All these guys were like highly top prospects. They've had success, a lot of them in the major leagues before. They're fairly known quantities, and all of a sudden they can't hit their way out of a paper bat. Like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
And I feel like not even last year, but the year before that, you know, when we had Albert back for the 1 year, you know, Adam, you and I went to a lot of games. And I really believe that, like, we even talked at the time about some of the choices that Marmol was making on those games that we were going to. You know what I mean? So I really believe even when the Cardinals were doing well, we were kind of like, okay, that's a risk, you know, especially when it comes to – especially like the pitching. That was the biggest thing, getting to the setup and then getting to Helsley and stuff like that. Adam, I mean, what are your thoughts, you know, even going back 2 years ago, you know, Adam, what's your thoughts here?
Well, I'd like Marbury to actually get back to the Wilson Contreras thing before.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah. My bad. Yeah. My fault.
Yeah. So yeah. I wanted to actually talk about this real quick before we switched off this topic, because obviously this is a real big blow for us. Since like OJ was saying that he is one of our top hitters this season. So it is significant for us. And with that broken forearm, you know, it does look like he's going to be out for at least 6 weeks, which is really pretty tough for us. And other players are just going to need to step up during this time. You know, this really just shows how rough the catcher position can really be, and why it's so important to keep, you know, talking about this, because really this was a big topic of discussion even during the off season, because obviously the catchers are being judged on their framing skills and pushing them closer, of course, to the hitters. I was actually just watching, some analysis where it was comparing last year to this year where Contreras was behind the plate. It was significant. It was like night and day. It was like a good couple of feet almost, it felt like, where he was literally almost up on the guy's ass in the batter. He was all up in that box, seriously. And the thing is that the number of catcher interferences are keep going up. You know, this is serious. The last season that I saw, I was looking at the statistics overall, with the most happened in 1974. We're getting up to that number again. And so I think Major League Baseball really needs to take notice of that. And I have noticed that there are some teams actually trying to kind of adapt by changing their catcher's positioning. Like for example, I was looking to see, like, with the Rangers, their manager had mentioned that he's having his catchers back off a bit because of those injuries, because he's seeing that more and more. So I think this injury just highlights that the league needs to do something about it, whether it's some rule changes or some protective measures or something, because this is becoming a real problem. So I just wanted to highlight that this is becoming a regular thing, and I understand the reason for it because of the whole framing situation and the skills behind it, but it's becoming increasingly dangerous. And of course, because of this, the Cardinals are not going to lose Contreras for a good month and a half into the summer, which is going to be very detrimental for us.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you want to talk about that anymore, but we can go then to the Marvel topic.
No, and Adam, you actually bring up a really good point when it comes to this too, because unfortunately, especially in Major League Baseball, they don't make major rule changes to, especially to safety, unless a star gets injured.
Right.
Buster Posey. Remember when he got trucked and all of a sudden he was out for a while and the Giants lost Buster Posey? All of a sudden, now, you know, catchers cannot block the plate anymore. They have to give, you know, the runners the advantage to be able to at least see the plate. So that way they take away the collision at the plate, because they don't want the Buster Posey, you know, injuries that continue to happen. But that year, specifically with the Buster, like that Buster Posey got injured, and I think that was 2013, if I remember correctly, or might have been earlier than that. It doesn't matter. But in that year, I remember ESPN just talking about it. It was because it was on Around the Horn, and one of the guys was like, guys, we want to make this rule change now because of Buster Posey. Five catchers have been injured for multiple months because of this collision, but because Buster Posey is a big, you know, star, it brings a lot of attention to it. Contreras is not that big of a star, and so, like, it's not going to bring that issue to it. And I think, honestly, robo-umps would fix this, because then you don't have to worry about framing. It is where the pitch is at.
It is, you know, where the pitch is.
Like, exactly. Right. And you have, like,
too. Because part of it now is there's, like, what they're doing in AAA, I believe, is, like, more of a challenge system. So you still have the ump calling balls and strikes for the most part. You can, like, challenge. I don't know exactly the rules around it. But in that kind of case, there could still be an advantage to trying to frame something. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. But my whole thing about it is, if you don't have to frame it, then you can sit safely behind the plate and you don't have to be that far up. You know what I mean? The only disadvantage you would have is, you know, if you're a few feet back, that's few feet more that you're having to throw the ball to second base to try to catch someone stealing,
potentially,
you know, so on and so forth. So it's not like, okay, this is going to fix everything, but there definitely needs to be some sort of solution.
There needs to be something.
Yes. Oh yeah. And the easiest one is just Miles Michaelis said it, just paint a line. Just put a line on the ground. You can't line up past this. Boom. There you go. It levels the playing field, keeps everybody safe. Easy peasy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they kind of already have that. Like, it's not like an actual line in the sand, but I mean, I remember, Adam, was it
like, it's like a ball or something if the catcher sets up over the line or something and the ump would have to call it. So, you know, you can make it so the base, so the home plate umpire or the base, the umpires down on the bases could maybe call it too. But yeah, that's basically what you do is this is a catcher area. Stay there or there will be consequences. Like,
one of the consequences is a broken forearm, which I'm sure that he's probably going to lay off. I don't know if it was Contreras himself that put himself in that position or if he was coached to put himself in that position. But obviously, he needs to be coached to step back a little bit, for sure. A lot like what the Rangers are doing, and that's what I was reading about them. So Bruce Bochy, for example, he was telling his guys, you have to back off a bit because if not, you're going to wind up getting broken arms and shit. You're going to get hit. So it's not worth it. So
the Indians, on top of that, they actually have guys that whose job it is to watch the catcher from the dugout and make sure he's not getting too close, because they're saying that it can be easy for the catcher to lose track of where he's at between pitches, kind of, and like
I can see that. Kind
of scooting, incrementally,
naturally, little bit by little bit, you kind of get closer, you kind of push forward. Yeah, I can see that.
So they literally have guys who are there that they yell at the catchers to back off when they know.
Get up, get back.
It's a problem that teams have known about because they've been doing this for years, and other teams have solved it. But I don't know if we have the same, if we didn't think that far ahead, or if we just,
Well, Contreras last year was doing just fine. It's not like this was a natural instinct that he just thought or that he started instituting.
He's been coached to do this.
He's been coached, I believe, to do it. He has. He changed his style because last year it was a significant change compared to what it is now. It's not like he bumped himself up like 3-4 inches. He was like not even in the frame whenever they were doing a side view, like a comparison. And they were lining up, the dugout in the background to the dugout in the background of the next, basically of the same shot whenever it was happening with Martinez. So, it was like clear as can be.
That's another thing that makes me doubt the coaching staff, because like it's just another thing where a good coaching staff thinks of that ahead of time and devises a solution ahead of time. Like what the Indians are doing, right? Our guys didn't think that far ahead. Same way as with the pitch clock. Remember last year, they're like, it sucks because of the pitch clock. We can't really change pitches. It's like, yes, you can. It's easy. Yeah. The fucking catcher sends the signal. If the pitcher doesn't like it, he shakes it off and sends the pitch that he's going to throw back to the catcher. Boom.
Right.
There you go. Problem solved. Practice that way a little bit and you can make sure your pitcher's throwing something he believes in. And you get, and if you really.
Because ultimately the catcher doesn't catch, it doesn't call the balls and strikes, or it doesn't call not the balls and strikes, the pitches, I meant to say.
Yeah.
He's not going to call the pitches.
They're supposed to, but it's up to the pitcher.
Ultimately, it's up to the pitcher. If he feels like my gut instinct is here, he can call whatever he wants, but the pitcher ultimately gets to decide what that decision is going to be.
Yeah, the pitcher is ultimately the one that has to throw it. That's
correct.
Why it
pisses me. That's the reason why before he could shake it off and be like, he would basically tell the catcher, he's shaking that pitch off. Nope, we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
That's why
in eighth grade when I was pitching, that I kept getting called for a curveball in a specific game, and I just didn't have feel for it. It was a cold day, like a weirdly cold day in August, and I couldn't even feel the ball really. So I could pitch a strike because, you know, it's just a two seam fastball and stuff. And my circle change was a little bit there, but I couldn't get my curveball at all. And I had no feel for it. He kept calling a curveball and I just kept shaking him off. And he visited the mound three times. And he's just like, dude, like, this is what we're going to do because the curveball at this level, I'm like, I can't feel it. So, like, what do you want me to do? Like, I'm not going to throw a pitch that is going to be a Rick Ankiel going over the backstop or, like, into the dirt. Like, I will throw a fastball below whatever, but I'm not going to continue.
Just let me throw a strike here, please.
Yeah, exactly. Let me throw a strike and let our defense do the shit because I don't have the feel for it. So, right.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So, ultimately, that's exactly it is on the pitcher.
Yeah. And so that's why, like, Jack Flaherty's like, oh, we're calling pitches that don't make sense or whatever. It's like, you don't have to throw it. You know, pitchers are shaking catchers off since the beginning of the game. It's not like you have to just throw whatever he puts down. Like, there's onus on you to change that if it really doesn't make sense. So
that's like going to a quarterback and saying, okay, you have one route. You got four receivers that are going to run routes, but you have to throw it to this one guy. Really? Right. How often does that happen except for AJ McCarron and the Battle Hawks? For God's sake, would you please stop throwing fucking smoke routes? Anyways. but you see my point, though. You know what I mean? It's just like you have the option. You are still it's still you in your duties. I don't get it, but
yeah,
you know, and that also could come down to a philosophy with Marmol too. You know, saying, hey, you're gonna trust in the catchers, listen to the catchers and throw what the catcher's telling you to throw. But I mean,
remember a big part of their pitching philosophy, well, at least under Maddux, was that they wanted to have conviction what they're throwing. So that means, like, above all else, you should make sure the pitcher's throwing a pitch he's okay with throwing in that spot. You know, so that's why I would default it to catcher sends the sign, pitcher sends it back. And there's probably even better systems than that. But, like, that's what I, you know, came up with in, like, 2 seconds of thinking about it. But apparently they were shocked by it. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why that's another mark against them. Like, I've been making marks against them. And, you know, I think one of Ollie's biggest weaknesses is pulling his pitchers out too late. Like, he waits to get somebody warming up until his pitchers give up the lead. It's like, this guy's going six unless he gives up the lead, and then we'll start a guy warming up. So he'll have the bases loaded with no outs by the time the reliever comes in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise, you give up two runs on a bloop single, and now you lost. And after the game, you're talking about, oh, man, you know, that. It didn't give up any hard contact, but it just fell where the, you know, like, no, dude, you didn't have to be that way. That's what we're not
again, or pulling people out too early, you know, especially the relievers. And like, if they're dominating, it's always something with him and his decisions are just not good.
No. It's a hard line to walk, right? Because you don't want to be
100%. Yeah.
That's your bullpen. But there's definitely times like, I just remember when I was younger, you'd be watching the game and the pitcher, our pitcher would be just cruising. And then it'd be like the seventh inning, eighth inning or whatever. He'd give up one, just a single, and LaRusso would pull him.
Oh my God. All the time. Drive me nuts. I'm like, why?
He wanted to pull the pitcher before the fire started, not after. I think that was a strategy that served him well. And we're way too reactive. We need to start implementing that approach.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I will tell you though,
Pulls them out too early. He always pulls them out too early, and then always leaves the ones that are hanging out to dry out there way too late. Yes. Like, yeah, it's never a happy balance between the two. It's like, okay, this dude is literally struggling. He has been struggling now for two innings. Why is he still pitching? Like, what the hell's going on, Ollie?
Yeah,
somebody warming up.
It definitely
feels. Well, we gave up 8 runs in an inning. I guess we'll start warming up somebody now. I'm like, what, you think? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it definitely feels like he's following a very, like, if else kind of script. Like,
I guess.
I mean, like, you know.
His decision making is very odd.
It's, you know, like, well, I mean, like, it's not. What's it? Flexible enough? I don't think. Like, it seems like
that's what I was just about to say.
It's not flexible. Yeah, following script or whatever.
Like, if we're ahead, our starter is in six unless he gives up the lead again. You know what I mean? Like, that's terrible. You can't pitch that or you can't manage that.
You need to be able to. It's like his baseball IQ is not where it needs to be.
Yeah.
It's like he's literally sitting there like reading how to manage a baseball team for dummies. Like, you know what I mean? That's what it feels like.
Maybe he's going to like chat GPT, like putting it all into AI or whatever and be like, what do I do now?
Exactly.
It's like use your gut instinct. You should have enough baseball IQ to be able to know, okay, this is what we need to do. Like, use your instinct.
And I would expect him to be able to do the, because you know Dave Duncan is sitting there doing his thing, like in Tony La Russa too. You know, they watch the pitchers and you can kind of start to see.
Yes, something. You see it. That's exactly right. You look for those signs.
Exactly. I feel like we don't have people in our dugout that are doing
not for whatever mature reason. Enough.
And I don't know if they're not capable of it, but it feels like they're not, or maybe it's against our organizational philosophy altogether to use your brain at all.
And just do whatever. Yeah, exactly. You know, go after the statistics. Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, they should
don't go off of intuition and go off your baseball IQ. Base it off of what the math tells us because, you know, baseball
is. We're money balling pitchers.
Well, yeah, it's like okay, it's more than just putting it into an equation and telling us what the computer tells us to do, you know?
You should be able to tell that your pitchers are starting to tire and start getting somebody up then, even if they're not in trouble.
If that's the case, then we don't even need a manager. We'll just pull it onto a computer and be like, all right, Alexa, tell us, you know, when do we pull our pitcher, you know? What's the point?
That's almost what it feels like. It's
crazy. What the hell?
But maybe I'm not being fair. I don't know. Maybe they're missing some sort of resources that all the other managers get too. I don't know. I mean, maybe the Cardinals cut back a bunch because, you know, I was surprised last offseason when Katie Wu mentioned in one of her articles that we have like the smallest MLB coaching staff in the league. Like, what? Like that doesn't cost anything.
We can't afford to pay them.
So we have the support staff to be successful. Like this is starting to sound like the Colorado Rockies. It's very scary. You know, and now we see the results again this year. Yeah. It's like
we can't hire coaches and to coach our team. That's like what? that should be the cheapest part of our. Yeah. Our salary here. It's not like
managers are like, you know, high fucking position. It's like position coaches and shit. You know what I mean?
This should be pretty basic stuff. The stuff that you just take for granted. That's just part of your overall payroll. Like, it's not like, oh, we got to have a big budget for that. You know,
it just makes me think the DeWitts decided to cut all that back because it's something the fans don't see. And they're like, well, I can save money that way. And, you know,
being a little too tight, just, I think, with their money now. And obviously that whole Bally's thing, I guess maybe got them shook up. I don't know, but
no one saw the problems before because they were winning. But as soon as they start losing and people start looking for why, all of a sudden see the fucking smoking gun. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, they're going to unfortunately feel that wrath though with, fan attendance is dwindling.
It is going down. Right.
And they're going to have to pay for that, unfortunately.
Yeah, so. Battlehawks are almost outperforming them in tickets.
The fact that a spring football league literally outshowed them in attendance, even in paid the attendance.
Cardinals.
To you the know, Cardinals.
Baseball heaven.
Yeah, and I'm like, really, bro? Really?
Yeah.
A spring football game that nowhere else can like have more than like 10,000 people show up at. Holy shit. So, we're supposed to be baseball heaven. You know, what happened to those days?
Well, the thing is that we can tell what we're looking at better than other fan bases. That's the problem.
I'm just saying we were known as baseball heaven for the longest time. And now it feels like it. You know, the rust is on the heaven's gates right now. You know what I mean?
I've never felt this mad watching the Cardinals. And I mean, I was watching them in the 90s. I mean, I was a small.
Yeah, they were really crappy then. I remember, for 96. But yeah, early 90s were very rough. Well, hell, most of the 90s were very rough being a Cardinals fan generally. 90s
kind of sucked. Like
96, the 90, like late 90s, things were decent. Well, they were tolerable because we had. Right. We did that in 96. And then obviously we had McGuire and all that and on the home run race with 98. And we had a distraction from all of that, you know,
and how crappy we were. Yeah.
and how crappy we were. So it brought people in and we have excitement again. But yeah, but you're also, right. From 90 to 95, it was very rough. If you know, if you guys remember baseball back then, yes, it was. It was very rough.
I distinctly remember like asking my dad if they were going to make the playoffs because I was like very small, and he was like, "What or if they'd been eliminated from the playoffs yet or something like that?" Because I knew they were doing so good, and he said no. And he said they're like 16 games out or something. And I was like, oh, well, they still have more games than that left on the schedule. They can still do it.
Yeah, well, we only won one title in the 90s, so yeah.
We're all but mathematically.
One Central Division title, I should say. We were a good team, obviously, in the 80s, and then things fell apart in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But
the 80s were good for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully they just sell the team if they don't want to spend money on it, because like I just don't understand why you would own a sports franchise.
Right. You know? Yep. Just come on, Bill DeWitt, get your shit together.
You really don't give a shit about it. You really just want to try and do as little as possible to it. Then just sell it, dude. Sell it to someone that actually cares about putting the winning product out.
Sell it to the people. We'll be like Green Bay.
You know what I mean? There you go.
Besides, it's something. To realize his investment, you know, he hasn't cashed out on it yet. It's probably getting close to time for that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Bill DeWitt Jr. is. He's obviously getting up there. I imagine that he's going to hand it over, of course, to his son, since he's obviously the president of.
That's what I think is happening. That's kind of what I think is happening. Like, I think that's the key. That's my suspicion.
It's really Bill DeWitt III is really running things in the operation.
Yeah.
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 I mean, he's obviously the president of operations and in essence going to take over the ownership, let's face it, because, you know.
And either he doesn't give a shit, just doesn't get it at all. And he's like trying to do things that on the face, he's trying to like make a facade of what it used to be, but it's not there at the core, which is why they can't shit. So. That's my suspicion anyway, unsupported by really any facts, just more like what I've been seeing. It seems like terrible franchises from the top down, those ones that have the worst owners. Like, it seems like that kind of shit where they just do all this dumb stuff that makes no sense.
Right.
Sorry. Just
I get it.
Got to vent a little bit.
Well, guys, let's transition out the Cardinals here, because obviously we can talk a lot about the failures of them at this point. But let's transition and talk a little bit about City and their failure, but not failure, and continuing for ties. So a quick update about City. They're now 2-7-1 for 13 points. They have one ties, and that's it. 0-1-0. Since last session. They are now, they're still ninth in the West. They're still an 18th in MLS. The problem is we are getting further back from the top of the group. So in the West, we are now 8 points behind Real Salt Lake, which is almost a full three games, really. And for the lead in MLS, which is Miami, because why the fuck wouldn't it be 11 points? Let's talk about some positives when it comes to STLSC. And the Ruiz rumors, I think that's how you – is it Ruiz? Ruiz?
I think it's Marco Ruiz.
Okay.
Marco Ruiz. What is it?
Yeah, because R-E-U-S, right?
I think it's Reyes. Marco Ruiz.
Royce, is that it?
I think it's Royce.
Royce?
I believe. So I looked it up, and it looked like Marco Ruiz.
Isn't it R-E-U-S? Okay.
Correct, but yeah, way to pronounce it is Royce.
Okay. So well, hopefully I'll be able to not learn that pronunciation. Real Madrid is kicking the shit out of Dortmund. But anyways, stuff here.
I was gonna say I like this guy. He's a German. I like that. Yeah. So yeah. Just saying. I like
Some quick stuff here before we get into the subject about it. So he's 34. He will be 35 later in this month. But for Dartmouth, he has scored 169 goals and 138 assists in 426 games, which is pretty badass. He is very, very good friends with Roman Berkey. Yes. He has trained and played with Leuven as well before. Not, I don't think, on like an official team or anything like that, but they have done like scrimmages and stuff like that from what I read. But the biggest thing about this is there's a lot of people in for City that are getting very, very, very excited about this. We are still in the preliminary talks with him. He's not even on our discovery list for anybody that does not understand what that means. So in soccer, in the international level, if you believe that you're going to sign somebody, you have to put them on your discovery list. And there's only so many spots that are on that discovery list. I think it's like 20 or 25 people in there. Essentially, like, these are the players that we're going to bring in for interviews and we are going to go after them. I don't know why the discovery list was put into play, but essentially it put in European soccer, it puts other teams on notice to say, hey. So, like, for a great example of this is Real Madrid is looking for Kylian Mbappe. That, I mean, that's been a very common rumor for a very long time. They're going to sign Kylian Mbappe when his contract with PSG is over. But if that was a – if that was, like, a very big – like, or a surprise or whatever, they could put him on their discovery. And then another team would be like, oh crap, you know, like, I'm going to go sign him. Or a perfect example of this be – was last time this happened 2 years ago when Kylian Mbappe was again rumored to go to Real Madrid. He was on his discovery, on their discovery list and everything else. However, a dark horse came into everything and kind of screwed everything up, and that was still PSG. PSG put him back on the discovery list and ended up signing him for 2 years. So that's kind of what the discovery list I think is for. I'm not 100%. If we had Danny, our, you know, soccer expert, he'd be able to tell us a little bit more about it. But I think this would be really badass for us to sign and have an attacking midfielder to go with Leuven, another German technician that can work with it. Now, that being said, too, I got to point this out real quick because I saw it and I'm like, you've got to be shitting me. Miami is expected to potentially get Griezmann, which is a French attacking midfielder that has won 2 World Cups with France. And Griezmann is amazing player. Like, I like Griezmann a lot. I've watched him play quite a bit of international and club soccer. But Griezmann to or Antoine Griezmann is linked to Inter Miami, so the rich gets richer
I was going to say, so they're the new Dodgers, but only of the MLS. All right, I got it.
This is the problem. This is the problem with soccer in general, is that there is no salary caps or anything else like that, right? And people always give me gruff that I'm a Real Madrid fan. Real Madrid was the only reason why I got interested in international soccer, because they had an all-star team. They had the big-name players playing for them, so why the hell wouldn't I watch them play? You know what I mean? It wasn't like I was watching the Premier League and like watching Arsenal and fucking or like going into Series A and watching AC Milan. I mean, they had 1 or 2 good players, but Real Madrid has all stars on top of all stars, right? So it's a lot funner, a lot more fun to watch. But the MLS, the way they structure their contracts, it's supposed to negate all this stuff. But thank you very much to frickin' Messi. That has thrown everything out the window. So now we have no idea what's going to end up happening with this. But I'm not. You know, go on. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, it's interesting, though, going back to the Ruiz thing, is that I can see why there might be some preliminary conversation or at least some rumors surrounding it. Because, like you said, he is close friends with Berkey. They spent 7 years together at Dortmund. So I also was looking up and it looks like his contract expires at the end of June as well.
Correct.
So yes. But he's also been linked with clubs, it looks like, in Turkey and also in Saudi Arabia. He has a lot of a range of options, it says here, of where he could continue his career. And while I think he is a very amazing player, he has a ton of experience, a lot of skill. I think he could definitely help boost our performance. And obviously having someone like him around would be great for our younger players as well. They could learn a lot from him. But from what I've been reading is that there are some people that are worried about his injury history and his age as well. Yes. He is 34.
Yep.
He's had his fair share of injuries. So I think we just need to be smart about how we use him if we end up landing him and make sure that, you know, it's a good fit. You know, I definitely think, though, that's something that the club needs to keep an eye on. But I think on the financial side, if they do bring him in, I think it could be a big investment, at least for us. It could pay him off. You know, it could definitely pay off. Obviously, it's not the big signings that Miami's bringing in per se, but it is a higher profile signing, which could bring in more fans or sell more merch or, you know, maybe attract more sponsors. Who knows? It could just help put St. Louis more, you know, city on the map per se, at least as far as bringing more attention to MLS. But I think if we manage it right, he could potentially be a game changer for us, but there are definitely some risks. But yeah, I think the potential rewards are huge, though, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, his last game is going to be, in the Champions League final against Real Madrid on June 1st. But to your point, Adam, his contract is not over until the end of June. Now, he will be able to negotiate with teams during that window period because he will not be playing for Dortmund. Like, so that you know, his their league is over at that point, I believe, or at least he has announced that he will not be playing for the club level at that point anymore. I think that, to your point, it would really help us bring our game to the next level. It'll definitely help us break out through a lot of these ties. But for sure, there is the question, of course, of what is he chasing at this point in his career? When I look at the resume and like try to look at some contracts that he's signed and stuff like that, he's not a guy that necessarily chases the money. He chases more loyalty, which is huge, because if Berkey can say, yo, come over here and you can finish out your career and for the next 4 years, right? Just, you know, you leave the game at 38, 39, and you don't, and it's not all on you either. We have a bunch of young guys here that can come in, you know, but you can play with another German, Lubin. You can come play with us here, or play with me here, you know, and be a big part of it. And you immediately will be in conversations to be winning MLS all the time. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to have Miami. Yeah, you're going to have Columbus. You know, you're going to have these really good teams. But regardless to the situation here, I mean, you come here and you're going to be an impactful player. If you're going to be chasing money, he's going to Saudi Arabia. That's just a simple
act. But I think we still have quite a bit of cap space currently, I think, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, we 100% do, and we can definitely afford him. It depends on how we structure his contract. But 110%, we could sign him. But you know, he's not going to Turkey. For anybody that really seriously thinks that he's going to Turkey, he'd be stupid to do it. If he's going to do that, it's the exact same level of play that's in Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia has way more money backing them up. So you'd be chasing more money. You would go there. I think that truly Messi coming over, and this we talked about this before on this podcast, Messi coming over the MLS was a much bigger deal for international soccer stars coming here than David Beckham coming over the MLS. Because back in the day, when David Beckham came over, MLS wasn't what it was. And now that it's much bigger, it has a much more pronounced international. You have the greatest, arguably the greatest soccer player that's ever played, and Lionel Messi coming over. That's a big ass deal. You know what I mean? Right. And I think there's a big difference between the two. As much as I was a Cristiano Ronaldo fan over Messi of who is the greatest player that's ever played. Although I think that Cristiano Ronaldo now is a freaking diva, and I really can't stand the guy anymore. But there's a big difference between the two. Messi wanted to come over and wanted to chase championships. He just didn't feel that he can continue to play. I'm sure he can continue to play in La Liga and wherever the hell else. But he wanted to come over and finish his career in America, right? Be close to his family and kind of like really an AJ McCarron, having his kids on the sideline. You know what I mean? And like being able to see him play and stuff like that, rather than being like surrounded by like a bunch of security guys up in the box and all that aspects, because things are a little bit more safe here in that aspect because people go freaking crazy and kill people just to see him. But Cristiano Ronaldo chased the money and they went to Saudi Arabia. I mean, he never even took the MLS seriously. I think that there's a lot, and that's why Suarez is now playing for Miami. Griezmann might be going to Miami as well. It's a big deal, you know, to have these international soccer, but even if they're old, eventually you're going to get a younger guy that's going to come over here and he's going to stay here. And all of a sudden, you know, MLS turns into a legitimate league. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So who knows when that'll happen, but it could happen very, very soon. So sure. I don't know, but you know, OJ, what's your thoughts here on this rumor? I mean, do you think that he obviously could help the team? I would imagine that's going to be your take here, but you know, not take away too much from you. What's your thoughts here?
Well, I'm not sure exactly if this is trustworthy, but apparently the Bild, B-I-L-D, have you ever heard of that? I think it's a German publication of some sort, but I'm not sure how reputable it is. But
yeah, never heard of it. Yeah.
I saw a tabloid.
I just looked it up. Yeah, it's a German tabloid.
Okay, so maybe I should just leave that one off.
Yeah, the tabloid. It's basically, yeah, it's It's a tablet, so you know, you get there are going to be a lot of rumors there.
For what that's worth, they say that MLS is the most likely option, and St. Louis is the most likely option of MLS teams. But
The build is absolutely spot on. I endorse the build.
Yeah, they're absolutely. They only speak the truth.
Only the truth in the build.
Yeah. But anyway,
it'll be interesting, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a possibility, I think, for sure.
I mean, with all these stars coming over, again, that's the thing about it. So be the forefront of that, because then you can go to all the younger players that will come over, or eventually, you know, where this signing's like, oh, this was a drop in the bucket. Well, he'd be like, I was in the forefront. Like, yeah, I fouled Messi, but I was the third big star to come over here and do it. You know what I mean? Like, well, in this time frame, because obviously David Beckham and a few other people like, you know, Wayne Rooney and stuff. Well, but
that's why all these guys are going to Miami now, because like, oh, we get to go play with Messi. So like, yeah, you sign some of these studs. Like, Reyes is apparently a legend at like Dortmund. So if that's true, I mean, that caliber of player, even at 36, like that dude's still going to be one of the top players in MLS, I would bet. I mean, he was playing against PSG in the recent UEFA Champions League match. Like, dude, it's not like he's like done, or it's not like he's been out of the
sport. Yeah, he's not riding pine, you know what I mean? He's still playing at
the high level still right now.
He's going to be playing like, into the finals in the Champions League against Real Madrid on June 1st. You know what I mean? Like, he is at the highest of the high for clubs that you could possibly be. For anybody that does not understand that, that is like the World Cup for club teams.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's that's what I mean. He's pretty he's so damn good. Like, I'm not saying he's Lionel Messi. He's not in that tier. He's tier down from that, I guess. Like, dude's an absolute legendary stud that would he would change the outlook of our team completely, in my opinion, if we were to land him.
So I think it would open up more people to be coming over here to play. Like, oh, he decided to go over there? Maybe we need to take St. Louis here. Yeah.
Well, remember, he plays in the German league already. So he's used to the style of play we have. So you could probably just slot right in and instantly become much more lethal offensively. Like,
I agree 100%. A lot of
his draws into wins. Like, we could be a powerhouse, I think, if we got this guy. So I really hope he signs here.
And the thing about it is, yes, St. Louis is a small market, but you have to look at it from an international standpoint, right? Truly, St. Louis kind of has a little bit of everything here. I mean, we are a melting pot of cultures. I mean, yeah, you have the Hill, but it has a lot of Italian history and stuff like that. Obviously, you still have a lot of Irish history and stuff like that, Dogtown. I mean, but there is a lot of different cultures. Bosnian, I was just about to say Bosnian. Yeah, like there is a lot.
Yeah.
Of different areas that are popular, but there's also a really good German presence here too. You know what I mean?
German presence.
There's a reason why Hofbräu got a franchise, and obviously wasn't in St. Louis, and it wasn't even in Missouri, but it was right across the border because they could afford the land there. You're not going to be able to go on.
Well, it made sense because there were a lot of Germans that settled in that area as well. I mean, Germans settled in there. St. Charles area through Franklin County, Warren County, all along the Missouri River, and also in southern Illinois, there were a lot of German settlers. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I'm here is because my ancestors migrated to this area from Germany. Migrated to grandfather and mother.
That's where Heidi Herzog was from, too, that area, right? 100%.
Yeah.
Why Herzog is that?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, like, again, I think that is a good boast. Yes, we don't have. We're not going to have the Miami nightlife and stuff like that. But if you're more of a family man, and also the thing about it, too, is if you kind of want more of a private life but still be a star, St. Louis is the place to be, man. I mean, you look Nolan Arenado, Albert Pujols, you know, was the greatest player of our generation. I think that we can safely say that at this point. Yeah, some people might say Mike Trout and stuff like that, but maybe that's a different generation, whatever. Albert Pujols, I think, was the greatest player that we personally would have ever seen live, okay, in our generation, right? I firmly believe in that. But Albert Pujols was very comfortable here, and it wasn't like he was, bum rushed everywhere. I saw him once at a Best Buy, and he had a hat on, and, like, he had some people around him. But
he wasn't like in LA.
crowding. Yeah. Yeah, people were like just crowding everywhere to say, and people were walking up and saying, hey, appreciate you, blah, 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 asking for autographs. He's signing mm-hmm. a few autographs and stuff like that, but there wasn't a huge commotion about it. And it's just like people.
When we saw Carr just sitting there amongst the people. Remember that over at a Cardinals game that was just out in the people, yeah. Like not even at his suite.
This is he was just right after there. They won the fucking Stanley Cup. Over. He is right in yeah. the open.
And yeah. we're just like we look over and I'm like, oh my God, that's Ryan O'Reilly, and he's just chilling yeah. in our like in the section next to us amongst the people. And you're not in a suite. And I'm like, he's brave, but you know, people were just going up there and saying, hey, thanks for being part of St. Louis, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the biggest difference between us and bigger markets, because like New York, all of a sudden here comes tabloids. Everybody's trying to take a picture. L.A., it's the same damn thing. Miami, same damn thing. But here yeah. we have a bunch of people like we just want to say hi.
You meet John Hamm and you can just chill and be whatever, you know, you can be Jenna Fisher and just pop into town and it's not that big of a deal, you know.
Adam, so. I told you that about the time I met Jenna Fisher when she was talking at New York's high school. And when I was at mm-hmm. Webster at the time, I went over and I said hi to her and stuff like that. She talked to me for like 10, 15 minutes. And, right. and I'm just like, you know, like, and again, it's Jenna Fisher. So she's a more of a local celebrity than she is all over. But this is still when The Office was huge, you know, and let's be honest, she kind of, you know, faded away a little bit because she more focused on her family life and stuff like that. But it's like that in St. Louis. There's a reason why Wayne Gretzky, you know, still has a house here. There's a reason why a lot of sports stars come here and settle here. You know what I mean? Because of the fact that St. Louis has a great community. People are awesome and people don't really like bug you. Like, yeah, like, hey, can I get a picture with you? And then I'm on my way. Yeah, you know what I mean? Cool. That was an awesome story. But yeah.
Because, you know, people here have self-respect, which allows you to offer respect to others. You know, they haven't completely sold their soul to fame and glamour like in L.A., you know? Like.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. there's a reason why, you know, these celebrities, they keep coming back in Afton, and he's just amongst the people, just coming back to town quite a bit and just, you know, going out and doing things in St. Louis that everybody else would do. And it's just part of, yep. you know, coming back to town, saying, hey, everybody, you know, and it's not that big of a deal. So it's kind of cool.
Another Missouri State alumni. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of them out there that people don't even realize are from St. Louis that are, you know, hail from here. And we're just like, hey, that's cool.
Or you're like one step away from being from here, you know, like, oh yeah, I have like my cousins there or my family's from there, you know, like right. these random people right. and stuff. It's funny.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, guys, let's go ahead and move off of this. I believe that we all agree that if the Rias coming over here would be amazing, it would be awesome for City, could potentially get them out of their tying slump and get some attacking going forward.
And we won't harass them in public. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. So please come over here, please.
Yeah, well, that was our pitch to move to St. Louis.
If Paul Crow was still here, I'd buy you a beer, but yeah.
Yeah, that's our pitch to you, Marco, to come live in St. Louis. You'll fit in very well. Yeah, we know you're listening. We have a great German scene here. Come here. You'll love it. We'll buy you a nice German beer.
We do have a badass Oktoberfest here in locally in St. Yeah. Charles, bro. The Oktoberfest is actually really good. It's a very good German. Yeah, by the way, too. So, Adam, our fans of Uber Cool, I did not know this, but they play down there. All the time, and I did not know that. So they play the German festival, but I mean it's Oktoberfest. They play that down there, so we might have to go see them.
I would love that cool. for sure. Yeah,
yeah,
another great German band. So
yeah, if just a quick shout out before we move on to the next subject. Uber Cool is a German style like polka band, but they play what is it, Dancing Queen and stuff like that as well.
They play more.
They're like, phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just traditional German music. They play like modern music, or more popular music, modern music. They play music from the 70s and 80s and 90s and stuff. And it's mm-hmm. just kind of cool. It's just, it's completely different from what you expect, but because they're singing it in German a lot of times. Yeah. And it's just kind of cool. You know, it's still, just, it's not traditional really cool, though, yeah. polka. You know, like you would expect at a German, you know, like Oktoberfest, but it's kind of, they're a lot of fun. I enjoyed it every time going over and grabbing some German beer and enjoying them over there. So there you go. You got me thirsty for some good German beer now.
I know, right? I miss all Brauhaus. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say some good pretzel. There we go. I'm down for it.
All righty, guys. Let's go ahead and move on to the Battle Hawks here. So get to the winning team. All right.
Hey!
So quick update. They are now 5-1. So we are 1-0 since last week, since obviously they only play once a week. We are now first in the XFL division, second in the UFL division. Which is behind the Birmingham the Stallions. Which by the way, if you guys haven't looked at it, the Stallions are 6-0 and we are now 6 games out of the 10 games. They've already clinched the fucking playoff berth because you know
did they really? I'm not surprised. Yeah. Well, of course they did because they have the winning record of 6-0. So there you go.
Well, it's not only that, but the second place team is Michigan at 4-2, and then they have two teams that are 1-5.
You know, right. So the USFL, like, right. I was going to say USFL league or not league, but the division. Yeah. The other teams suck. We all knew it was going to be Birmingham. So that's the only competition. Really, it is. So.
Well, and that's going to be the real big, interesting one here. So in 2 days, we face against those Stallions. Unfortunately, we're in Alabama.
That's okay. Yeah. I guess it's a homecoming for AJ McCarron. So there you go.
Yeah.
If don't boo him too loudly down there. Got it. Your hometown boy.
Yeah.
Hard for them to boo AJ McCarron down in Alabama.
Definitely not. Like, are you kidding me? There's probably going to be more people cheering for him.
That's what I'm saying. For real. Like, they're going to be like, hell yeah.
It's a pseudo home game.
It really is in a way, yeah. It's
Birmingham. I mean, I know they don't got pro sports in Birmingham, but I assume most of them pay attention to you know, the Crimson Tide.
Alabama. So.
Well, yeah, obviously, if you're from Birmingham.
They're not in Tuscaloosa, obviously, but like, again, this is a big
hit. I say they're Bama. They're Bama all the way in Birmingham, no doubt.
They even care about this game is what I wonder.
Absolutely, they do. So.
Well, that's good. Got to crush it. Yeah.
Because, I mean, Tuscaloosa, I mean, Birmingham's not very far from Tuscaloosa at all. So there you go.
I think it's like an hour, right?
I don't even think it's that far.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm going to look it up here real quick just to see how far it is. It is an hour. You're right. It's 57 miles. Yeah. So it's an hour. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
56 That's minutes. I'm driving, you'll get there in about 45. So there you go.
I do a cool 45.
Cool 45. I'll get you to Tuscaloosa. So yeah. So it's a home game for AJ.
For sure, dude. Like they're gonna be, because they're gonna be Razorbacks fans mostly. But unless they're actually fans of the Birmingham Stallions, like,
right? Yeah,
not sure how many of those people there are.
But they've already won they already clinched. So they really want to see AJ win one on, like, you know, at home per se. You know what I mean?
It's a wishful thing, you know.
We'll give one up for the homeboy, you know.
Man, so. We're lucky that he didn't wind up on Birmingham because that would make too much.
No doubt. Yeah.
Yeah, you weren't lying there. No doubt. Would have been like, fuck. Well, we're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. They would have been fully screwed. But anyway, well, it'll be a very interesting game. I'm looking forward to it. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, OJ, I want to get your opinion on it because I'll go to you, Adam, too. How do you feel we're going to stack up to the Stallions, and what do you think the final score is going to be?
So, I think that we're going to win because I'm not sure how much competition the Stallions have faced thus far. I think the Battlehawks are the best team in the league, so I think the Battlehawks are going to win. As long as nobody gets, you know, all things equal, I think Battlehawks win, and I'll let them be a little closer. We'll call it like 34-24. How about that?
There you go. Wow, boom.
34-24.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, a 10-point victory. I like that.
Man, so that's
right up our alley too, where we have to make things close every single fucking week. It feels like, good lord.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't we win like the last two games by like 20 something? Like, I mean, wasn't
not last game
22 to
no, that was a very tough win, I guess you want to call it that. We should have
we should have demolished them, but we
should have
them around way longer
Houston
than we could
sucks.
Have.
we kicked a lot of field goals, and the format allows you to make up ground quickly, especially on teams not.
I mean,
touchdowns.
It was a lot closer than it should have been. Let's just say
that. Yeah, exactly. Like three field goals is one touchdown with a 3-point conversion on the other end. You know what I mean? So, right. Like, it's cool we're getting points, but, like, okay, you got to get the ball in the fucking end zone, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was 8-22. We only won it by 14. Go on, Adam.
Yeah. I'm looking at the matchup here. So I'm looking overall between the two. McCarron by far is the better quarterback, I would say, versus Martinez.
No, he's Martinez right now, by the way, is in a lead for the MVP vote, apparently, behind.
Really?
Or AJ McCarron's okay. Behind him. And it has to do with the fact that Martinez runs the ball. And it's just like,
that's
okay,
the
well,
only
cool,
reason
you're
why.
Shitty
that's
defenses.
The,
yeah.
That's the only reason why. Because honestly, AJ has passed him by like almost 400 yards, I think.
Yeah.
Or somewhere there. I don't know. Somewhere, I believe. He by far is the better quarterback because, okay, so he's so he's a Lamar Jackson, is what you're telling me? Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's the thing. So McCarron, I like him because he's mobile enough. And it's like, I know that's a theme in the modern NFL too, is that you got to have a somewhat mobile quarterback, or it's highly desirable to help the offense find out, because it's pretty tough to stop some of these guys. So, you know,
and take Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is that way. He is the prototypical. He is like, if you are teaching a kid on how to play quarterback, that's the guy you're watching. And it's not just because he's amazing and obviously, you know, now he's won 3 Super Bowls. Even if you stripped all that away from him, the way he plays the game is phenomenal, because he wants to put the ball into the action, into into his playmaker's hands. However, when he sees no other option, he'll run, and he's sneakily fast. He's not like super fast. He ain't gonna blow you away by any stretch of the mean, but he picks his moments so well, and he does it in pristine moments. He did it last year in the Super Bowl. And he did in the year before against the Eagles as well. And that big ass run on a broken ankle, not really broken ankle, but you know what I mean? You know what? I'm going to stop talking about broken ankles when it comes to Patrick Mahomes. Okay, please God, no. Right. But he does it in pristine moments. And that's the one thing I think he has over Tom Brady. When you look at the comparison, Tom Brady never ran it. And even if he did, he didn't even know how to run. You know what I mean? So like, I think that Patrick Mahomes is the prototypical. And to me, there's a little bit of that where AJ McCarron this year so far, like when he gets really frustrated, he almost plays better because he then starts running the ball at Adam. Like, as you saw in the third and fourth quarter of this past game, since we were there, he started running the ball, didn't see his first and second read. He goes, screw it, I'm just going to put my shoulder down. He's a bigger guy. You know what I mean? He's not going to run over a linebacker, but he could challenge a defensive back, and he's competitive. That's my thing. I love watching dudes that are competitive. It's UFL, and he's played much bigger games and stuff like that. But he's here for a reason, wants to be here for a reason. He's going to go put it on. Exactly right.
So looking at other leaders of us as well. Obviously, like you said, Birmingham is more of a rushing team. But overall, though, rushing yard wise, Martinez versus Sailors, it's about 80 yard difference between our leaders. Looking at, obviously, from a receiving yards percentage or perspective, I should say, Hakeem Butler, hats off to that guy. MVP, that guy is incredible. Obviously, he's been a great addition for us, and I'm so glad that he's, one of our receivers as well. I think he's going to be a pivotal player in this game for sure. AJ connecting with Hakeem, no doubt. Looking at the touchdown, between the two, did you realize Martinez versus McCarron? Martinez only has 8 touchdowns total completions versus McCarron's 14. So just saying, overall. And also Willie Harvey, who, of course, if you're not familiar with, is one of our linebackers, actually is leading their linebacker as far as number of tackles as well. So he has 39 to Zeno with 36. And overall, I think we have a very good chance. And also our kicker too has a higher amount of points as well. So I think in all areas so far, offensively, we look very good offensively stacked.
Yeah, I think the game's going to – Yeah, go on. That's where I was about to get to. Yeah.
I was going
to
say the game's going to be decided by our defense ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that I'm worried about is
which offense defense is going to show up and can our defense hold? That's exactly what.
Right.
Yeah,
that's mm-hmm. the. That's and that's why I wanted to kind of paint this picture is that stacked on paper, offense, we have the upper hand, but the defense is can we hold them? That's why I wanted to paint that picture here, because I think that's why it's going to be a closer game. Do I think that the Battlehawks can do it? Absolutely. But I think it's going to be a very close game, and it might be down to a field goal. So every opportunity we get, we have to go for it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's going to be a close game, but I believe that the Battlehawks pull it off. I'm going to say by like 5 points. I don't know exact scores because it's hard to judge in UFL, but
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. With this whole like 35 extra points and it depends on how where you're at in the game and how things are. There's a lot of dynamics that go into that. It is a little trickier to predict scores here. Yeah. And there's also, of course, the fourth and 15 or whatever rule or whatever at the end.
Yeah. Fourth and 12.
Fourth and 12. I'm sorry. I said fourth and 15. Fourth and 12 rule.
It was last year. So it's fourth and 12 this year.
Okay, got it. So I wasn't crazy in thinking it was fourth and 15. So they just bumped it up by, 3 yards. So, but anyway, that rule as well is a little bit of a different element as well. So it is a little bit different to predict versus the NFL, but it'll still be close. But the Battlehawks will prevail in Birmingham. And we will go on to give them their first loss, and we will have a tie record.
Yep. Alabama's going to have to get used to teams from Missouri beating them.
Yes. And I think this will definitely be the preview for June the 16th at the Battle Dome in St. Louis for the championship game. So this is the preview. Get ready.
I agree. Yeah.
Hell yeah. And then you got Missouri going down. Well, I think I think Missouri's at Bama.
They are October 26th. They will be in Bama. Yep. I just checked it.
So we're gonna go 2-0 in this calendar year for Missouri teams in Bama. I like it.
It was Tennessee last year, this year it's Bama.
Yep.
Yes, sir. Like it.
Go.
Like it.
M-I-Z.
D-O-U.
All right, guys, let's head here to sign off. Adam, would you like to tell the listeners and how they could follow up with our cacaos on our socials?
I was going to say, if you would love to give our lovely Battlehawks a shout out or a cacao, or you'd love to especially shout out us, we would love to hear from you on our social media platform known as Facebook. Check us out at facebook.com/thehometownlosers. Be sure and spell that LOUSERS, as well as check us out on x.com/hometownlosers. Retweet, relike, reshare, and definitely comment, because we love to hear from you.
Absolutely. OJ, what do you have for the game of the week?
We got two big ones coming up. It's on Saturday, 5:11. You got your Battlehawks at Birmingham, as we just discussed, 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. But then at 7:30, so plenty of time for that game to get over with, mm-hmm. We have St. Louis City hosting Chicago Fire. So I believe they're calling it Rivalry Weekend, which it's kind of hard to have a rival in a different conference, in my opinion. But
I guess because of Chicago, so technically. But Chicago.
Hey, what's the motto of the hometown losers? Fuck Chicago.
It's punch a Chicago fan day, I guess.
Yeah,
Blackhawk day.
See someone wearing a coat hat, just go ahead and punch him right in the back of the head.
There you go.
The random dude that's wearing a Blackhawk jersey at every single sporting event.
What the hell is that about?
Game. Are you fucking kidding me?
What is wrong with people?
It's It's a real life choice.
It is just so like, I don't understand people.
They just especially. Want somebody to come talk to them, even if it's hate, because you know they're still in their mother's basement. You know what I mean? Playing NHL 12 on their Xbox 360.
You're right. They're desperate for attention. I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that in mind, once again, listeners, it's that favorite time of the episode where we're going to dive into the numbers once again and let Josh tell us all about the stories behind the game. So without further ado, let's send it right over to Josh for this week's
Stat Blast.
I appreciate it, guys. So I got two of them here that are related to baseball. One is crazy and one is just really hard to even imagine. The hard to imagine one, I'm going to start with that one here. Do you guys know how many no-nos have been in MLB? So how many no-hitters have been thrown in MLB history?
Oh, God.
And I know, it's a lot more than you think. Yeah, in a whole.
As a whole, since like the 1800s or whatever? I don't know.
Yeah, so it's 323, which is a lot more than I thought, to be quite frank.
I was going to go there's been 250-ish, I was going to guess.
See, maybe? That's what my guess was, too. It was like 220 is what I kind of had, too, when I was looking at it. But it's 323. Out of those 323, 36 pitchers have pitched multiple no-hitters. So 36 pitchers have pitched no-hitters. Oh, it gets even crazier than this. But there is one guy that stands out above them all. Johnny Vandermeer pitched two consecutive no-hitters in 1938. He pitched on June 11th, 1938. He had a no-no against the Boston Bees. And then 4 days later, on June 15th, against the Brooklyn Dodgers, pitched a no-no as well.
Nice.
Wow.
Just even unthinkable. You know what I mean? Like, to be able to pitch 18 no-hitter innings.
The odds,
I can't even
that,
do that when I have all the stats all the way down against the batters on MLB The Show.
I mean, that's the most unbreakable record I think that could ever occur, because let's face it, that doesn't happen ever.
Oh,
yeah. If you were somebody, if you were a fan of that team when he did that, you'd be like, this guy's the greatest pitcher of all time.
So let me get this straight. I misunderstood. So he threw two consecutive no-hitters, but he didn't pitch like back-to-back games. So he pitched in the next game. But still,
two consecutive starts. Right?
Okay, because I was be like, this dude is beyond a beast at that point. Like, this dude's like beyond a god. He is the god among gods.
Yep.
Yeah. That's insane.
Track.
Have there actually? I wonder if there's been any pitchers that have pitched multiple perfect games.
No, there's not. I've already looked at.
Okay, so they've only been able to pitch one perfect game and then that's it. Never again.
There's been a couple instances where a perfect game and then a no-no. But it is mostly, you know, like if you pitch multiples out of those 36, it's been two no-hitters.
Gotcha.
It's much, much easier to do, because obviously, like, there's been a couple no-hitters in baseball. There's three of them, because I looked this up. Three no-hitters that were losses on the pitchers because of errors.
Yeah. You're kidding.
They walk people, and then there was errors, and it cost them the game. I pitched a no-hitter in grade school and lost the fucking game 4-1.
You could walk the bases. You could walk.
I mean, I guess you could. Technically, yeah, you could.
Theoretically, that's true. Yeah. Like, literally,
that's right?
You could walk it. You could walk it. You could literally get into major leagues and, like, just say that, you know, you're signed for 1 year and they're keeping you for 1 year and you're a starting pitcher and you walk 10 guys consecutively every single game. You lose that game 6-0, but your entire career is 0-0 on your ERA because you never gave up a hit.
That's funny.
You know, they're unearned runs. It's a kind of a weird statistic, but it's true. They can do that.
Crazy. If it's people make a big deal about that guy that pitched no hitter on acid. Which, yeah, it is a feat. But if you look at the box score, I'm pretty sure I remember seeing he walked a lot of people. it was a no-hitter. But he was definitely wild, too.
But he was also not in the – he wasn't in the strike zone either. So he was all over the place. I mean, I guess I could technically throw a no-hitter in that sense that – But the problem is the game would never end, and it would be the most highest scoring game.
You get pulled after the first. Yeah.
That's the problem. I would still be out there on the pitcher's mound. I wouldn't even be making it to the pitch. I wouldn't even be making it to the batter's box. But he wouldn't be able to hit it.
Well, no. I mean, you could walk in or run every inning or something, you know, something crazy terrible, and it would still be a no-hitter.
So it would be 5 billion to nothing, and I'd be like, I'm still a no-hitter. It's
fine. I want us to see the Cardinals, because the Cardinals don't even have a game ever. Like, a team that's existed since the 1800s has never had a pitcher throw a perfect game for them. Like, that's
crazy. The Yankees that have, I think, 7.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, they got all their wins in when they players were basically slaves. So,
indentured servants?
Yes, indentured servants.
We're gonna treat everybody the same, like indentured servants? Yes.
Yeah.
Basketball. God, I love that movie. Okay. Anyways, speaking of acid, I think my edible started to kick and got. I'm just
kidding. Oh boy.
Yeah, anyways, last one here. So first and foremost, this one is about Babe Ruth. Do you guys know where Babe Ruth finished his career? Was it with the Yankees or was it with a different team?
No. I'm trying to think where he went, but it wasn't the Yankees. I knew this. I'm trying to think. Damn it. I'm trying to remember.
Atlanta Braves.
That's it. Yep.
Well, it wasn't even the Atlanta Braves.
Because he wasn't a pitcher for them either. I think wasn't he playing in the outfield or something?
Yeah, no? And he was playing the outfield. He was playing right field. He came in very late into the season, so he wasn't in any of the, and they didn't make any playoffs or anything like that. He played 28 games, had 72 at bats, had 13 hits, which 6 of them were home runs. He also had 24 strikeouts and 20 walks in that time. But that's not even what I was going to bring up here. This is just a crazy statistic, right? So in 1920. Babe Ruth hit 54 home runs. Okay. Not the record, but that's still pretty impressive, hitting 54 home runs. When you took a look at the teams, so like the team's home run statistic, Babe Ruth by himself hit more than all the AL teams. There was only one team in that year, in 1920, that hit more home runs than Babe Ruth did. As a team. And that was the Phillies. In the National League, they hit 64. That's just how fucking crazy he was back then.
I want to go back to those days. Home runs are bad for the sport. That's just my opinion. Too many.
Honestly, I agree. I really wish that there was a way that we could bring it back to those type of days. Like, you still have your Major League Baseball, then we call it like old time baseball or whatever, where they're like, you know what I mean? Like they're hitting it with, like, I don't even know how to. How would you go back to those days? But you know what I mean? Like, it would be cool to see those type of games again.
Yeah, but you have to push the fences out. They'll never do it. That's why it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
You have to actually make it hard to hit home runs again. And, like,
then you still have a good point. Yeah. They wanted to be high scoring, a lot of, you know, a lot of high offense. Yeah.
The only way to truly combat 3 true outcomes, in my opinion, is to make it just really hard to achieve, really hard to hit with enough power to make it. Wow. You see what I'm saying?
See, and I think that to me, that would be way more, it'd be more exciting, because it honestly would be kind of a blend of softball and baseball in that sense. So say, like, instead of dead center is 400 feet, it's 600 feet, right? So a home run can happen, but it's going to be really difficult, and you're not hitting at the dead away center field. But your fielders now, your outfielders are going to have to, like, play there's a lot more green grass that they're going to have to run around. I would be okay with them bringing in a fourth or even, like, another outfielder that plays shallow or whatever. You know what I mean? I don't want to, again, make it too easy. But maybe you have one rover guy.
Yeah, I'm sorry? 3 outfielders out there, because that way it emphasizes athleticism. You're not going to be able to stick Kyle Schwarber in left field because he can't play there.
That's a very good idea. Yeah. You're not going to take your worst, you know, fielder and stick him in right field. That's a very good idea. And there's a lot more running, and there's a lot more running on base paths too. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I think it'd be I think it'd be really exciting.
Doubles and triples, and people would love that way more. I bet you. That's my vision. Because,
like, if you get a guy with decent enough speed that hits it into the gap, you're like, oh, if they don't cut it off in time, this could be an inside the park home run. And that's way more exciting than watching the guy hit one out of the park. So, mm-hmm.
I built that kind of park in the show. I use it for my creative team and shit. So that's pretty fun. Yeah, it really is that way. If you could hit one, just lace a line drive to the gap. If it gets by the outfielder, it's like, you're like, oh yeah, this is at least a triple. Yeah,
right.
It's pretty.
All right, guys. Well, as always, it's a lot of fun talking to you guys and listeners. Please reach out to those socials that Adam mentioned, and so you can reach out if you have any questions or want to see any specific content on the show. Please let us know. We love interacting with the listeners. And please, please watch the Battle Hawks as they take on the Stallions and Tacaw, and obviously support all St. Louis teams. But I really want the Battle Hawks because they're the only team that's doing anything right now. So it's like you just kind of put all your eggs in the basket behind the Battle Hawks. So anyways, guys, I appreciate you too. We will see you next week here on the Hometown Losers Podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
This is OJ, and I wanted to thank you guys for listening to the equivalent of three dudes sitting at a bar talking about sports. We'll catch you next week on the Hometown Losers.